So today we are going to be discussing the ideas of Gan Eden and Gehenim. As we saw previously, the Ramban's view is that Gan Eden is distinct from Gehenim. Gan Eden is distinct from Olam Haba. Gan Eden and Gehenim are part of the Olam HaNeshamos, where a person or a person's soul resides upon their death, as opposed to Olam Haba, which takes place after Tchias HaMesim. And the question is, what is the purpose of this existence, namely Gan Eden, and why is it different than Olam Haba? So the Ramban writes in Shar Gemul that the primary place of reward is Olam Haba. Aval aschar hakodem v'hu ma sheyagia l'adam achri ha'maves miyad hu Gan Eden. The initial schar is Gan Eden, where a person's soul goes immediately upon death. Just as Gehenim is the place where the wicked soul, the souls of the wicked reside upon their death, so too Gan Eden is the place where tzaddikim go. Now we are familiar with the Gan Eden as a physical location from the opening parshios of Parakim of Sefer Bereishis. So the question is, what's the relationship between Gan Eden that we read about in Parshas Bereishis with the place where the souls of the righteous resign after their death? So the Ramban writes a fascinating and very surprising thing. He writes that they are one and the same, and he even quotes geographers who claim to know the exact location of Gan Eden. He writes, remarkable, it's in Olam Hazeh, b'makom mimekomos haaretz, and there are four rivers that go from it, v'chol ma sheba b'kasav mipshutei seder bereishis hakol emes ein mikra yotze midei pshuto. So there is a place in God on this world with four rivers and the like. Vanchi hamidos atzman yomru shegan Eden tachas kav hashvaya shelo Yosef hayom velo yachsar. It's around the equator, right below the equator, so that the days are even. And then he writes a little later that halchu haloch ba'aretz va'avru me'ever lahodu kidmas Eden. It's to the east of India. It's a little problematic. India is well above the equator, and he says it's slightly to the south of the equator, so the geographers must have gotten a little confused. But one way or the other, he's telling us that that Gan Eden is actually a place on this world. Now, you might wonder then why it hasn't been discovered by Google Maps. Perhaps this could be understood by a number of references in Chazal that refer to a shar of Gan Eden. And in fact, the Torah itself describes imposing barriers to prevent entry. So what seems to be the case is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu hid Gan Eden. There might be certain portals, or again what Chazal referred to as a shar, to enter it. And of course, the truth of the matter is that these matters are highly obscure and beyond our ability to really understand. But then the Ramban continues, and he tells us what exactly it is that makes Gan Eden so special. And he answers that the physical features of Gan Eden, such as its four rivers and the like, allude to esoteric spiritual concepts, such that Gan Eden affords access to unparalleled wisdom. So he writes, for example, V'hine asa b'kan hakol mashal v'remez. all of the things, the rivers, the trees, and the like, are a remez to deep concepts. And holistically speaking, Gan Eden is the ideal place for the understanding of God and connecting to HaKadosh Baruch Hu through a deeper level of spiritual reality. He writes, V'adam arishon ma'aseh yadav shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu mivchar b'nei Adam haya b'tvuno v'das v'shchino HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'mivchar mekomos lahana u'letoeles haguf. V'tzir b'makom ahu hanechbad kol ma'aseh ha'olam ha'elyon hu olam ha'neshamos b'tziur gashmi. So he took everything from the olam ha'elyon, we'll describe that in a moment, but the upper spiritual worlds, and created for them a physical expression, a tziur gashmi, through which a human being was able to understand and arrive at these truths. Lahavin misham yisod kol anivra gufi v'nafshi u'malachi v'chol ma sheyesh ba'asagas anivra lahasig min habor yisparach. In other words, Gan Eden is the place through which a person can understand maximally what a person is able to understand of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Gam ha-makom ahu nechbad mikol mekomos ha-olam ha-shafel mepnei ha-mutzak asher al rosho min ha-olam ha-amtzai v'ha-elyon. Specifically, it is connected through this mutzak, he writes, to the olam ha-emtza'i ve'olam ha-elyon, and that is what provides the opportunity to reach this unparalleled wisdom. What exactly does he mean? The pasuk says, "V'hanar yotze me'eden lahashkos es hagan." So the Chachmei Ha'emes understand that the pasuk here is referring to three different places. The nahar is yotze me'eden, and is mashke the gan. So the gan is Gan Eden, and what sustains or infuses this gan is the nahar, which is yotze me'eden, it leaves Eden, and is mashke the gan. So we see three places. These correspond to what the Ramban refers to as the olam ha'elyon, emtza'i, and tachton, or put differently, the olam ha'machshava, the olam ha'dibor, and the olam ha'maisa. The river connects the two, and therefore it's through this mutzak that a person is able to reach these unparalleled spiritual highs. Valken yir ubo kol maros ha'lokim yoser mishar mikomos ha'aretz. Ka'asher anachnu ma'aminim she'aretz Yisrael Yerushalayim mikomos nechbadim miyuchadim l'nevua be'atzmam mipnei mutzakam v'chol shekein beis hamikdash kis yeshem. Here the Ramban refers to a fascinating point, which is, he says, that just like Eretz Yisrael is the ideal place for nevuah, so too Gan Eden is the ideal place for chachma. Each one through the unique mutzak that they have that connects them to the upper worlds. So just like Yaakov Avinu, when he arrives at the Beis HaMikdash, or the Makom HaMikdash, becomes aware of the potential of this place, so too in Gan Eden. So Yaakov Avinu was Tala Nevuaso Haba Ilav Mibilti Hakdama Kavana B'malas HaMakom. Yaakov, who experienced Nevuah without normal hachanos, at the Makom HaMikdash attributes that ability to prophecy due to the uniqueness of the place, of the Makom HaMikdash, so too, when it comes to Gan Eden, that Makom allows us to be masig kol ma sheyachol hanivra ladas ulavin kelimud Moshe Rabbeinu alav hashalom b'Sinai. Later, the Ramban explains that Gan Eden is not only a physical place. V'im tomar kevan sheha'inyan al derech hanizkar mikol makom Gan Eden b'olam hazeh hatachton hu maschar haneshamos sham v'hem ein to'alatam b'davar gashmi v'lo b'makom b'mekomos ha'aretz v'olam hatachtonim. One second. What goes to Gan Eden? It's the neshamos. The neshamos have no benefit from a physical place. After all, at this point, they are separated from the body. Kvar pirashnu shainyan kafuol. V'zeh gan eden hatachton hein tziurin l'sodos alyonim. So the gan eden hatachton, which he was describing earlier, which does exist, has a parallel world above it, much like we sometimes refer to the Beis HaMikdash HaTachton, and Kenegdo, there's a Beis HaMikdash Bashamayim. So too, there is a parallel Gan Eden, in which is a spiritual dimension parallel to the physical one on this world. V'advarim ha'hem ha'elyonim ha'remuzim be'elu gam kein nikrain Gan Eden. The upper one is also referred to Gan Eden, as is the lower one. Okay. So let's try to understand this a little better. Obviously, we're not going to fully understand it, but let's. I think there's a lot hidden here in this Ramban. So what Ramban has told us is that Gan Eden is the worldly place most suitable for intellectual comprehension of God, and I think it's fascinating, given the sources, that Gan Eden is in Bavel or associated with Bavel. There are numerous associations, both in Chazal and in Tanakh, especially in Yechezkel, which of course was written in Bavel. Look at Perek Chaf Ches for a number of them, associations between Bavel and Gan Eden. And that said, it seems strange that Gan Eden isn't in Eretz Yisrael. After all, we know Eretz Yisrael is the physical place on this world which has the greatest affinity towards Kedusha. Now, there are some sources that connect Bavel to Eretz Yisrael, but they seem to be two different places. Ramban explicitly states that they are two distinct places, like we saw before. Kasher anachnu ma'aminim she'Eretz Yisrael v'Yushalayim mekomos ha'nechbadim yuchadim l'nevuah be'atzmam, so too Bavel with respect to Chachma. So according to Ramban, Eretz Yisrael is the ideal place for prophecy and an experiential connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, while Gan Eden, and to some degree Bavel, is the ultimate place for an intellectual connection to God. The connection between Bavel and Gan Eden and Chachma, as I said, is made in Sefer Yechezkel, Perek Chaf Ches especially. And perhaps we could understand this connection as follows. The Kuzari writes that Chachma and Nevuah are two paradigmatic ways of connecting to the Ribbono Shel Olam. The former, namely Chachma, is an intellectual method associated with the Seichel or the Moach, while the latter, Nevuah, is an emotional, experiential connection to the Ribbono Shel Olam associated with the Lev. Adam, as the Yetzir Kapav of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, achieved distinction within the realm of Chachma, while Avram Avinu was distinguished with his emotional connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, something that he discovered on his own. And thus, Avram Avinu is told to leave Bavel and go to Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael, as the Ramban told us, is a place of prophecy, a place of emotional intimacy with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now, this does not mean to say that it's exclusive to Eretz Yisrael, and certainly that Chachma is exclusive to Bavel and Gan Eden, but as Ramban told us, these are the ideal places for this, their respective forms of connection. And this may explain, Rav Tzadok explains, why the development of the Torah Shebal Peh took place in Bavel. Torah Shebal Peh, and the development that took place as seen in its greatest form through the Talmud Bavli, lacks the intuitive experiential character that direct prophecy has. But it too is a unique way of connecting to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Gemara tells us that the Torah of Bavel is one of darkness. The Gemara in Sanhedrin says, Chav Dalet Amud Aleph, B'machshekim hoshivani, the Pasuk in Echa writes, you've placed me in darkness, Zu Talmud Bavli. Nevertheless, even though Talmud Bavli is connected to Choshech, Halacha is like Talmud Bavli. And even against the Talmud Yerushalmi. And one expression of this is the way in which the Talmud Bavli arrives at its conclusion. It arrives at the MS through questions, through answers. As it were, it's in the dark with respect to the halacha, and through questions, answers, and reconfiguration of the ideas, it arrives at the truth. So while it lacks the same luster as something that is received directly from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, at the same time, it's something through which a person has an unparalleled kinyan in, because he arrived at it on his own. This is an idea, as I said, developed by the Netziv in his Kidmasa Emek, Reb Tzadok, Reb Cook, and others. Now, Reb Tzadok explains, let me just elaborate a little more and then I'll take your questions. Reb Tzadok explains that the intensive period of prophecy did not lend itself to this form of methodical analysis, because when prophecy dominated and there was this intuition, so then the development of chachma through seichel and independence could not dominate. And therefore, it began after Pisuk HaNevuah at the beginning of Bayesheni and reached its apex in Bavel. And he writes, actually, it's quite a beautiful, we can't read it inside now because I want to keep moving today, but you have some of the Makoros and the sheets I sent you, but he writes about how after prophecy ceased, their Torah Shebaal Peh was neglected and nearly forgotten, and it was from this period of darkness that first the Anshei Knesset HaGedola began to save and recreate, and essentially that this is only possible in a world without prophecy. So in light of the above, we could understand why in the Olam HaNeshamos, or the Olam HaNeshamos, which serves as a, as we'll see shortly, a spiritual way station of sorts, is associated with Gan Eden and Bavel, while Olam Haba, which is the ultimate goal, is represented by Eretz Yisrael. As we saw earlier, the purpose of Gan Eden is that it prepares the neshama for Olam Haba. And the Ramban writes that the intellectual connection must precede the emotional connection. The Ramban writes in his Drasha L'Chasana that Rabbi Lazar Omer Chachma Berosh, Rabbi Yeshua Omer Chachma Belev, a dispute whether Chachma is Berosh or Belev. Uva Kasav Hashlishi V'Echriya Beinehem Lomar Shachachma Berosh Umisham Mispashetas Belev. And likewise, after a person dies, they first begin an existence which focuses on Chachma, which is the experience of Gan Eden, and Misham Mispashetas Lelev, which is an Olam Haba. Now, ultimately, in Olam Haba, this bifurcation between the Chachma of the Lev and the Chachma of the Rosh goes away. And it's the experience of Gan Eden that allows for that. So that in Olam Haba, and this is why in Olam Haba there's a restoration and a reunion of the Guf and the Neshama, in Olam Haba the bifurcation between the Moach and the Lev goes away. And this is what the Prophet tells us in Yeshayahu, Ki nicham Hashem Tzion, nicham kol charvoseh, v'yase midbara ke'eden, right? So the midbar of Eretz Yisrael becomes like Gan Eden, v'arvasa ke'gan Hashem. So here we have a merging of Gan Eden and Eretz Yisrael. Sason v'simcha yimatzei batoda v'chol zimra. So eventually, as I said, there is a reunion and a merger of these two aspects, these two focuses of Avodas Hashem. Yes.
Does the Rambam say that the prerequisite for Nebuah is possible?
Absolutely. And I don't think that there is some degree of disagreement about that, but we're not saying that Chachma is exclusive to Bavel and Nevuah is exclusive to Eretz Yisrael. So that's an interesting question also. What we're saying is, what's the focus? What's the ideal place? And that's what the Ramban says. The ideal place to achieve Chachma is Gan Eden. The ideal place to achieve Nevuah in this world is Eretz Yisrael. Thus, there has to be a time where of development of Chachma for the Neshama after they die, and that's in Gan Eden. And that can lead to and prepare the Neshama for the ultimate reunion of the Guf and the Nefesh, which takes place after Tchias HaMeisim and Olam Haba, which is Shayach to Eretz Yisrael.
But I thought he says that
I'll say two things. First of all, again, we're talking right now about the Ramban's Mahalich. But second of all, the Ramban, when he says you need intellectual perfection, doesn't mean absolute perfection. There are 10 dargos of Nevuah, right? And the Ramban himself writes that the higher dargos of Nevuah achieved greater levels of intellectual perfection than those beneath them. So clearly Nevuah is possible without the highest level of intellectual perfection. This, by the way, also relates to, but I don't want to get into it now, why Matan Torah wasn't in Eretz Yisrael. Because Matan Torah is when that Chachma was given. Anyway, not for now. Yeah, did you have a question?
I would say, it's another point about Bavel, is that the Gemara in Bracha,
mm-hmm. Right.
Right.
Yeah, you could definitely understand the source that it's usher to leave Bavel just like it's usher to leave Israel in that light. And again, al pi pshat, the reason there is because Bavel's a makom Torah, but the Gemara, which bases that among other things on the pasuk, might tell us that this is the place for Klal Yisrael to be at this time, and that's precisely because of the purpose of that experience. Yes?
If Chachma is conveyed in Bavel and Nevuah is conveyed in Eretz Yisrael, so therefore how could it be that there could be any learning of Torah Shel Baal Peh in Eretz Yisrael? I thought we said Lo Yibalgul Bashamayim, and therefore...
Absolutely, absolutely. So again, the Ramban is not saying that this is the only place. Eretz Yisrael is also a place of Torah Shel Baal Peh. As Reb Tzedek himself writes, you know, the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah began in Eretz Yisrael, and that's where the transition from a world dominated by Torah Shebichtav and Nevuah to a world dominated by Torah Shebaal Peh and Chachma took place. So we're not talking about exclusive pursuits. Rather, what the Ramban is saying is the ideal place for Chachma is Bavel. The ideal place for Nevuah is Eretz Yisrael. And that's part of why we needed this the experience of Torah of Bavel, and why Halacha is Ketalmud Bavli, Keneged Yerushalmi, and the like. That's why in the... Okay, yeah.
Just a clarification. So after we talk about Bavel, what's the Gan Eden? I mean, here they go to Gan Eden and
They experience a Gan Eden above, because they're a neshama not associated with the guf. But it's important that to recognize that there is a Gan Eden tachton that exists, and that is connected to Gan Eden above.
Well, we can't access that.
As far as we know, we can't access it now, unless you find one of the portals to Gan Eden. But it was Ratzon Hashem that we leave, at least for the time being. The next section, which I'm going to largely skip with you, but just I'll summarize it very briefly. The Ramchal develops and expands upon many of the ideas presented by the Ramban concerning Gan Eden. And Ramchal's basic thesis is that we could divide a person's existence into two stages. The first is a period of spiritual struggle and accomplishment, what we experience in Olam Hazeh, and the second is a period of reward, namely Olam Haba. And the Ramchal explains, he alludes to this in Mesillas Yesharim, and he expands upon this in Derech Hashem, that naturally these two stages call for different environments, with the Olam HaNeshamos being the bridge. So, specifically he writes that there are two purposes for the soul's experience in the Olam HaNeshamos. Number one is a way station prior to resurrection, where the soul can experience sublime spiritual delight while this world, Olam Hazeh, continues until the world arrives at a point where Olam Haba is ready. And the second is as a rectification and a preparation for the resurrection of Olam Haba. Namely, the spiritual soul's experience in the Olam HaNeshamos allows it, both Gehenim and Gan Eden, allows that which was its radiance, which is tainted and dimmed due to its proximity to the body, to somehow be cleansed and allow it to radiate with its full brightness. So essentially then, the purpose of the Olam HaNeshamos, which again is Gan Eden and Gehenim, is to allow the soul to regain its lost vitality and thereby fully partake in the experience of Olam Haba after Tchiyas HaMeisim. So now let's turn to Gehenim. So, like other aspects of the afterlife, we do not find explicit discussions of hell in the Bible. The Tanakh, we do find certain allusions to a fiery place of punishment. For example, the Pasuk in Yeshayahu Perek Lamed writes that Ki Aroch Me'asmol Tifta Gam Hi Lamelech Uchan Hamik Yerchiv Madurasa Eish Veitzim Harbei Nishmas Hashem Kinachal Gafris Boaraba. The most common term used in Tanakh for hell is Sheol. We find that in many places. We do find a term referred to the Gay Ben Hinnom, which was a valley outside of Yerushalayim that became designated as a place for idolatrous worship, and later Yoshiyahu destroys it. In Chazal, we find that the term Gehenim is associated with post-mortem punishment. For example, the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos says, V'sofo yoresh Gehenim. In Erevin Yud Tes Amid Aleph, the Gemara says that Gehenim is a contraction. Gehenim ge she'amuka she'akol yored la al iske hinam. So Gehenim is a deep valley that everyone descends to due to iske hinam, Rashi says, is a rios. The Gemara also tells us that there are several names, Zion Shemos Yesh LeGehenim. Ve'eluhain, Sheol, Avadon, Ber Shachas, Bor, Sheon, Vetit, Hayavan, Vetzalmaves, Ve'artzatachtis. Rav Dessler suggests that the varying names and descriptions given to Gehenim reflect our inability to relate to the spiritual agony that's associated with Gehenim, as long as we're connected to the body. So accordingly, physical analogies are employed, as well as emotional analogies. So sometimes we see Gehenim compared to fire. Other sources, as we'll see shortly, stress or depict Gehenim in terms of intense shame. And again, as we'll see later, while it's true that Gehenim is clearly an extraordinarily unpleasant experience, which again could perhaps be compared to the pain of fire and the shame of humiliation, nevertheless, the primary purpose of Gehenim is not one of punishment, but rather it's one of cleansing. And essentially, and again we'll elaborate shortly, but essentially the fires of Gehenim burn and eradicate that which is bad within us. It's similar to the process of Libun, when you burn out the treif blios of an oven. And what remains then, after we've experienced the fires of Gehenim, is that which is true and that which is genuine. So what remains, and naturally then, what remains after a person has left Gehenim is very different for some people than for others, depending on what part of them is true and what part of them is false. Rav Dessler writes, though, that even though we can't really fully appreciate what Gehenim actually is, it's very valuable to try. He writes, Amru Razal, Bebrachos Daf Nun Zayin, Eish Echad Mishishim BeGehenim. Gufa Adam Mushba Mitzurim Shebachosh. Why were Chazal giving us these types of descriptions? Because people are scared of, or I should say, are moved, are inspired by physical analogies. He said, if you imagine the type of pain you experience by putting your finger in a fire for one or two or three seconds, imagine how much pain one would experience if it was a much stronger fire and much longer period of time. And he says, this is why you find both in Chazal and in Rishonim and in Achronim so many descriptions of Gehenim. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter goes even further in asserting that imagining the pain of Gehenim is the most important tool to avoiding sin. He writes in the Igeres HaMusar, Nesima lev lihisbonen b'inyan haveros v'nira kishtaim hema b'sugeihen. Maybe we shouldn't read the whole thing. He distinguishes between two types of averos and two types of nisyonos, how we should fight each one. And he writes, where it's bolded, Ad asher be'aznav yishma u'kimat be'enav yira ha'onesh ha'gadol be'kamos ve'echos nitzav l'neged enav kema'ama rabosenu zal li'olam yira dayan. And he shows that's not just a dayan. Ki'ilu gehenim psucha lo mitachtav. Why were Chazal telling you that you should see ki'ilu gehenim psucha lo mitachtav? Because this is a powerful tool. Now, the Musar movement's focus on punishment is one of the reasons why some rejected the Musar movement. You all know the famous story from Halachic Man, where the Rav quotes from Chaim's understanding that this is strong medicine that might work if you're sick and be necessary, but someone healthy shouldn't focus on death, shouldn't focus on Gehenim. It's not. It's more likely to make you depressed and unable to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And of course, even within the Musar movement, there were different perspectives. I think it's certainly true that nowadays, even those among those who study Musar, it's taken for granted that the way it's often said is that we're very weak, and instead of being inspired and motivated by descriptions of Gehenim, we're more likely to be turned off, and therefore focus is more frequently placed on positive images and inspiring lessons as opposed to scary images of Gehenim. But again, it's a motif that you see in many, many Sfarim throughout the ages. So, returning now to Ramban, Ramban discusses the precise nature of Gehenim, and he asks a number of obvious questions. Im tomar, she'onesh magia legufo shel adam achar misaso, v'halo gufo shemeis ke'even domeim. Im tisrof atzmosav lasid, oh, timshach osam be'afar simon v'chulei hamekaymen oso ein hefrish le'evan azu b'kach u'mikre echad le'tzadik le'rasha begufo achar maves. Whether you're a tzaddik or a rasha after you die, your soul separates from your body. So what are the fires of Gehenim going to do to you? V'ech yeh guf hazeh b'gehenim. How could the guf go to Gehenim? V'zeh b'tovas ha'olam haba. So basically, Ramban writes that Gehenim obviously can't be a place of physical suffering because the body doesn't feel anything after the death. And furthermore, the body is buried in the ground far away from wherever Gehenim is. And therefore, clearly Gehenim must involve the suffering of the soul. But then he says that leads us to a different question, because the soul can't be harmed by fire. And a spiritual being cannot reside in a particular place. So how could we say the soul goes to Gehenim? And moreover, the Torah speaks of a punishment called kares, which seems to be a form of spiritual punishment. But how do we even know that there is something else besides kares, something that we're referring to as Gehenim? So Ramban, just to summarize before we read his answer, basically answers his question in three parts. First of all, Ramban demonstrates that there is in fact another type of post-mortem castigation besides kares, what we call Gehenim. Then he brings multiple proofs that Gehenim exists and describes its nature. We won't focus too much on that, but he's marich on this point. And finally, he addresses the above questions concerning the physicality of Gehenim. So Ramban notes that there are some people who claim that Gehenim doesn't exist. The only post-mortem punishment is kares, that which is referred to in the Torah. In fact, a simple reading of the Rambam's Mishneh Torah seems to point in that direction, though shortly we will see that that is probably not the case. So, that being the case, how do we know there's Gehenim? And the Ramban brings a number of proofs. One, he says, is that the Torah only promises kares for a small number of prohibitions. So clearly some other form of retribution must exist. Moreover, if there was nothing besides kares, then it would be very strange that the same punishment would be meted out for a heretical mass murderer as well as someone who ate chalev. So there must be something more than kares. Now the Ramban himself, I don't think we'll get to it later, does say that there are actually, if you look at the psukim, three types of kares. Okay, then as we said, he describes Gehenim. And in terms of the issue of the fire, so he says that we're not talking about physical fire, and the soul can't be bound to a physical place, but rather Gehenim, in Gehenim HaKadosh Baruch Hu creates a spiritual fire that afflicts the soul in a place called Gehenim. V'hu yisbarach shemo bara hamakom shenikra Gehenim uvara bo eish daka min adaka she'ena guf mamashi nitpas tofeses bidvarim hadakim u'michale osam. So this spiritual fire has an effect on a spiritual entity and destroys it. V'sham koach ha'esh hazu ba'oso makom ha'nizkar ba'asher sham ha'kochos ha'sichliyim ha'nivdalim shehem ha'malachim l'kitoseihem ba'shamayim. Maybe we'll be mekatzer a little bit. As we mentioned, besides the analogies of fire, there are many analogies to shame associated with Gehenim in Chazal. Rav Nachman focuses on the agony that results from the awareness of the two consequences of our actions. He writes, Ein onesh gadol yoser mikoach mikach she'adam roeh umargis masha pagam. In other words, simply seeing what we've done, there could be no greater agony than that. There's the famous Beis Halevi that focuses on the humiliation that we will feel from recognizing the inconsistency in our own lives. Oy lanu miyom adin, oy lanu miyom atochacha. Maharal writes that the realization of the worthlessness of so many of a person's worldly pursuits is sufficient to cause this agony. We saw earlier the Nefesh HaChaim described the naturalistic understanding of Gehenim such that we build Gehenim around us. And again, he too stresses She'ein al derech ha'onesh v'nekima chas v'shalom. The Tiferes Yisrael has a very nice analysis of this. He writes that Gehenim, again, is not retributive, but rather it's a natural consequence of our sinful choices. And more than anything else, it's a gift. He writes, Lo bederech nekima chas v'shalom rak letovasa lezakeka ulezachecha lehaneshama ha'elyona zos ulashiva l'yimei ne'ureha v'achar titaher lachazos b'noam Hashem ule'or b'or ha'chayim. So essentially he writes that all Jews, Kol Yisrael Yeshlam Chelek L'Olam Haba. Why? Because we have a neshama. And the makom of neshama is in this Olam Haba. However, our neshama is tainted through the low-level choices we make on this world. And therefore, we should see Gehenim not as a punishment, but as a gift, as an opportunity, as a means by which we can restore our soul to its youthful luster. And he writes, that's why Chazal tell us, the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, Daf Yud Zayin, that Gehenim, at least for the vast majority of people, is no longer than 12 months. That's, by the way, the custom for saying Kaddish for 11 months. Why not 12 if the Avelus is for 12 months? And the answer is, a person does not want to impute and imply that their parents received the maximum penalty. So a person stops after 11 months. But the idea that it's only 12 months, only 11 months, is a reflection of the fact that this isn't nekima, rather it's a process and a transformation, again, not a pleasant process, but a process that allows the neshama to transform itself and be prepared for its next step. Okay, briefly, I want to discuss Rambam's perspective on Kares and Gehenim. So if you take a look at Hilchos Tshuva Perek Ches, the Rambam writes as follows. Hatova tzfuna letzadikim hi chay olam haba, v'hi hachayim she'en maves iman v'atova she'en imara. So the makom of reward is olam haba. Upirona rishayim, what is the place of chastisement and punishment for the wicked? So here we would expect him to say Gehenim, but that's not what he writes. Pirona Rishayim hu shelo yizku l'chayim elu ela yichrisu v'yamusu v'chol mi she'eno zoche l'chayim elu hu hames she'eno chay li'olam ela nichras b'risho v'avad k'behema v'zeu karis haksuva b'torah. Shenemar hikares hanefshahi mepi hashmu alamdu hikares ba'olam hazet hikares li'olam haba. So the ultimate punishment is not Gehenim. What could be worse than Gehenim? Dying. Not dying in the sense of your soul separating from your body, but rather entirely ceasing to exist. The pasuk says hikares tikares. Chazal tell us, hikares, the first lashon is olam hazeh. When someone gets kares, they die. And they die not just olam hazeh, but tikares, olam haba. So the Rambam tells us that much worse than any punishment, any experience of suffering and pain in the afterlife is simply ceasing to exist. Dying like an animal. And that's what kares is. The Rambam does not mention anything about Gehenim. He does not mention Gehenim explicitly at all in Mishneh Torah, except as a passing reference in Hilchos Sanhedrin Perek Chav Gimel, where he writes, Li'olam yirad dayin atzmo kilu cherv munachas lo al tzavara v'gehenim sucho lo mitachtav. It is mentioned in the Vilna edition of the Rambam, but that's a mistake. So, that being the case, there have been those who claim that the Rambam denies Gehenim. All that is what he writes over here. Namely, there's Olam Haba, and there's Kares. And failure, Kares is the failure to get Olam Haba. This is problematic for a number of reasons. Number one is in his Hakdama to Perusha Mishnayis, he does discuss Gehenim. He writes, Amnam Gehenim hu shem letzar ulaonesh sheyasig l'rishayim. There are those that say, well, the Rambam was Choser from what he wrote in the Perusha Mishnayis. That's problematic because the quote here where he describes Gehenim is from the Kapach edition of the Perusha Mishnayis, which was written after Mishneh Torah and even after Mor Nevuchim. It was revised. You could say, well, he didn't really mean it. That's we've discussed that approach to the Rambam. But even more problematic is that if you look at the Rambam himself in Mishneh Torah, where he supposedly denies the existence of Gehenim, it's clear that he believes in some form of post-mortem punishment, which is, call it what you may, you could call it Gehenim or you don't have to call it Gehenim, but that he clearly does not believe that all there is Kares and Olam Haba. Just a couple of examples, though there are many, and the Ramban himself brings a number of these proofs. The Ramban, in his long letter, it's published, it's known as the Long Letter, it's published in, it's because it's long, in Kisvei Ramban of Shevel, in Chelek Aleph, on page Shin Mem Gimel, that's where the Ramban defends the Rambam against many of the attacks upon him in a rather poetic letter. And he makes a number of diukim where it's clear that the Rambam did believe in Gehenim. I'll just cite a couple of them. The Rambam writes in Hilchos Tshuva, Habeinonim im haya bechlal mechta avono shelahen shelo iniach tfilin me'olam donin oso kefi cheto v'yesh lo chelak l'olam haba. The Rambam describes that a person who has sinned, a Beinoni, so he is punished for his sins, but then eventually he does have a chelak in olam haba. And v'chein kol rishayim shavonoseim merubim danin oso kfi chet ehem v'yesh lam chelak li'olam haba. And who doesn't have a chelak li'olam haba? That's a relatively specific group of people, right? He writes later, v'elu shein lam chelak li'olam haba ela nechrasim v'ovdim v'nidonin al godel risham v'chatasim li'olam ul'yol me'olamim. Here he describes, even those who don't have a chelak olam haba experience eternal suffering, right? Nichrasim v'ovdin v'nidonin al godel risham v'chatasam li'olam li'ol me'olamim. In Hilchos Tshuva later, Perek Vav, he writes, v'yesh chet sh'adin nosein sh'nifrayim mimenu li'olam haba v'ein le'over alav shum nezek be'olam hazeh. Talks about punishments, again, after one dies. So I think a careful reading of the Rambam doesn't really justify this assumption or this theory that he denies death or some forms of punishment after death. So why doesn't he elaborate? So his answer, the Ramban writes, is what the same reason why the Rambam writes, I don't elaborate about a lot of things like Trias HaMesim and the like. What's to say? And we can't understand it. And therefore, there's no need for much elaboration. The Ramban's only critique of the Rambam is that he should have mentioned that it's 12 months. But again, to summarize, the Ramban writes, why didn't the Rambam discuss Gehenim? V'zeshelo izkir harav darkei Gehenim mipnei shehu etzlo min advarim hamofsim behelem inyanam v'hu tofis darkei haTorah bevir advarim hamizbarim be'achreach v'raya gemura. He says the Rambam is just following the path of the Torah. The Torah also doesn't tell you much about Gehenim. So the Rambam is following the Derech haTorah and therefore not elaborating. In terms of the Rambam's theory on Kares, there are a number of issues and seeming stiras. There's an interesting Maritz Chios in Yevamos on Daf Beis Amud Aleph on Tosfos there, who suggests that according to the Rambam, there are Shnei Mini Krisos, Karis HaGuf and Karis HaNefesh, and again, Ayin Sham, if you'd like to see a little more. I'd like to, let's, a couple more points. Yeah. No, because that's the extreme people. Even the Ramban agrees that extreme Rishayim are nidon li'olmei olamim in Gehenim. It's most people, those that are begeder kol Yisrael yeshlam chelik l'olam haba, are only there for 12 months. But there are certain Rishayim, and you see that in Chazal as well. The Gemara in Gittin describes the suffering of certain Jews, even. So that continues. So when the Rambam says liolam liolmi olamim, he's referring to the kat sheinlam chelak olam haba, as opposed to standard rishayim that yeshlam chelak olam haba. That's the question. How do you resolve those two points? So that's one of the sources that the Maratzchias uses to suggest is two types of karis. Okay. We have a tradition recorded in the Gemara Sanhedrin, Sadi Zayin and Bar Aleph, that the world will be destroyed for 1,000 years. The Gemara says, Amar Rav Ketina, Shis Alfei Shanei Havei Alma, V'chad Charov, Shenemar V'nizgav Hashem Levado Bayom Ahu. In other words, for that 1,000 years, Hashem will be alone, and that's a reflection of the destruction of the world. The Rashba in a Tshuva concerning this topic, Chelek Aleph Siman Tes, writes that we know all this based off of Misora, and therefore, despite scientific evidence to the contrary, we believe that it is true. The Gemara, as we said, mentions that this could be seen from the fact that it says, V'nizgav Hashem levado bayom ahu. However, not everyone understands this means that the world is entirely destroyed. The Rashba in that same tshuva writes, V'chad chariv she'eno noheg al oso haminhag, ela b'mina garua v'nifsad mimenu itzad yeshus ha'olam hagufani. The Rambam in the 29th chapter of the second section of the guide proves that it can't mean total destruction, because then it would be illogical to say it's for 1,000 years, since time is a property of the world. And thus, if the world's utterly destroyed, then there would be no such thing as time, and therefore you can't say 1,000 years. The Ben Ish Chai writes about how it's a restoration to the world's roots and the like. Now, generally, this period is understood as preparation for Olam Haba, and instead of an immediate transition from Yemos HaMashiach to Olam Haba, there's going to be this intermediate stage of destruction and reconstruction. What's the purpose of this stage? So the Ramchal writes, essentially, that the purpose of this stage is just as the body needs to decompose before it could eventually be restored with the neshama after Tchias HaMesim in Olam Haba, so too the neshama the world needs to decompose or be destroyed before the Olam Haba could be created. V'ula milvad kol zeg gazra midas dino yisborach shelo yuchlu lo ha'adam v'lo ha'olam me'ate yigia lo shlemus odam b'tzuresh in iskalkala. Shlemus can't be achieved as long as they remain in their form where they were miskalkel. Dehainu atzura sheyeshlam achshav shebo nisra behara. El yitztarech lem bechreach avur ma'avar ha'hefseid. Dehainu amisa l'adam v'ahefseid l'chol shar ha'hovim sheniskalkelo imo. So that is basically the purpose of this this destruction. Okay, God willing, next week we're going to finish this sugya, and we'll start the next one. There's only one or two more points that I think bear bear mentioning, or at least that we're going to mention, many more points of bear mentioning. So we'll pick up next week, Amir Tzashem, and have a wonderful Shabbos.